Well, let's start with something a little different that I try to put in now and then, which is the heroes of statistics. So what are those? Well, here's one of what I would call the first heroes. Abraham de Moivre. And that sounds French. He is French, but he actually did his most important work in England because of the persecution of the Huguenots. So he wrote in England the Doctrine of Chances. And at the time, people loved gambling. And for that reason, statistics was also at the time a wanted thing. A method of calculating the probability of events in play. And during that, he was looking at proportion of heads. And well, I hope you recognize this distribution as a Gaussian one. And then you might say, why? That's not a Gaussian distribution. That should be a binomial if it's heads or tails. But it turns out that when you flip the coin many times and look at the fraction, then it turns out that, all right, it actually comes out to be Gaussian-like. And that's also what today's exercise is much about. So let's go to today's lecture. Here we are. And we will talk about the chi-square distribution today. And actually, the idea of the binomial and the Poisson going to the Gaussian is Monday's subject. There we'll talk about PDFs in general. Today, we'll talk about the chi-square, and that is because it plays a central role. So the chi-square sits here, and the chi-square is closely connected to fitting. And it's also connected to hypothesis testing. And those are some of the major things this course deals with, which means chi-square takes a central role. And the chi-square is something that came about, I would say, slowly. But to some extent in 1801. Because on the 1st of January, 1801, there was an Italian astronomer who discovered what he believed to be a new planet. It turns out now that it's the asteroid, the biggest asteroid, Ceres, but he saw it passing across the sky, which is why he thought it wasn't a star. And he kept looking at it, but unfortunately, he fell ill. And when he recovered and having more measurements, he couldn't see it because it had disappeared behind the sun. Then he thought, whoa, I have to publish this. And he did so. And people would then guess when we get around the sun and we should see it again, if it is a planet further out, then where would we expect to see it? How do you sort of fit these points? And it turned out that it was a 24-year-old mathematician, physicist who solved the problem. He wrote it back. He wasn't going to observe anything. He just said, that's a math problem and I can solve it. And then it was discovered again on the 31st of December, still 1801. And the young man's name was Carl Friedrich Gauss, and we will see him again in action. And the method that he used was a method he invented for the purpose, the method of least squares. And what that does is it says, if you have a series of points here, P1 to P6, then if you want to put the line that sort of matches these points best, or the function that matches these points best, then you should minimize not the distance, but the squares of the distance. So you take the distance to the line and then you square it, and the total area is what you should try to minimize. If the line is far away, you of course get large numbers. And if it's far away on one side or the other, you get large numbers. If the slope, well, the more the line is good, the smaller the area, and you should minimize that area. And so that's actually the idea. then you might say, why not include the uncertainties? Well, at the time, uncertainties weren't really well established. So there's a reason why that was not included until later. Now, let's look at it in general. Here we have what's an overdetermined system, right? Here's again an example. We have here 9 points, and we have only one parameter if you fit this with a constant, right? So it's an overdetermined system. So there are more, you could say, equations than unknowns. And that means you can't make it go through all the points. Now it's the opposite. You cannot. You need to ask yourself where to put it the best possible. And the best possible is to minimize the sum of the squares. And use that. And that is how data fitting is to some extent done. And more generally, you should think of, we find a measure, some number that we can calculate, which we wanna minimize. And this is very general. This goes all the way to machine learning. What is good? You have to define what is good. And then once you've defined what is good, you know, what you wanna try to optimize, then do that. And yeah, with that, one can fit points. Now, the problem is here, the points do not have uncertainties, and not all data has uncertainties. But the least square doesn't care about that. It just says minimize the least square. So let's try that. Here, I've put some points in black. So that's the data. And there are four different hypotheses. You see how we're nearing hypothesis testing as well. But you want to see how well they fit. And you can see from the data that, of course, a line or something doesn't fit. But, well, a third degree polynomial might fit. How about, well, a fourth degree polynomial that doesn't have a cubic term also seems to fit reasonably well. Or 2 second degree polynomial. And then you might say, well, the 2 second degree polynomial, how many parameters do these have? And a sine function plus a constant. How many do they have? Well, the sine function is 3 parameters and a constant, that's 4. So is the third degree polynomial. So is the fourth degree polynomial minus a cubic term. The 2 second degree polynomials, that sounds like 6 parameters, but they have been stitched together so that they're forced to be continuous and the first derivative to be continuous. And that means this function also only have 2 parameters. 4 parameters. So they all have 4 parameters. And now we can calculate which is the best. And you get a least square here. And it says, well, red is best, green is second best, the sine function is third best, and the fourth degree polynomial is the worst. The problem is if you take a different set and you get this, now the values are, well, first of all, closer. And now it's the sine function that's the best. But how do you define how much better it is? Can you say something about that? Is there any way of saying, well, they're all equally good or equally bad? So that's what we're trying to solve here. Now let's go to the chi-square method. And in the chi-square method, we also include the uncertainties. Here, all the points have the same uncertainty, but at least now we include uncertainty. And in the following, I would like you to sit and discuss in small groups, in breakout rooms, in to what extent you think which one is best here. And now I think I will have to stop sharing to make breakout rooms. And I want you to be not too many in each. Well, about 3 to 4. So let's take 2 or 3 minutes where you try to ask yourself and discuss which of the 4 curves is the better one.
Hi, Truls. I was left all alone in the breakout room.
All right.
So I can discuss with myself.
Well, you can just sit and look at them. That's perfectly all right.
Okay, thank you.
Anyway, we'll end in a minute.
Okay, before we end in a minute, I have a question. I'm fairly certain that I answered the questionnaire. There might have been gone something wrong while I submitted, but I'm fairly certain that I tried to come up with 50 numbers. Yet I'm not in the list of students, so I don't know if
Okay.
something went wrong.
Okay. That's good to know. When did you do it?
Actually, not long after you posted that we all the information for the first time.
Okay.
So I can't remember the exact date, but it was weeks before the course started.
Yeah. Okay. That's cool. You should be in then. Thanks, Sophia.
No problem.
Troels, ham du sendte mig i breakup room med, han er vist ikke til stede.
Nå, ja, det beklager jeg.
Nej, det er fint.
Det var ment, at breakout room skulle have størrelse 3, men der er et par enkelte, den er sat til 2.
Ja.
Nå, men vi går tilbage nu. All right, you're invited to, in the chat, write which one you think is the best one. You can just do it by color. Red, 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 red. Red is a clear winner. All right. Well, thanks a lot. Let's continue. So before we discuss which color is the best, let's just go to defining the chi-square. Many of you will have seen it before, but let's just state the problem. If you have n data points, x comma y, you and uncertainties on y, then you want to adjust the parameters theta of a model such that it fits the data best, and by best meaning, you minimize the value of that chi-square as a function of parameters, these parameters. So you change the parameters until this is minimized. And what is this? It's a sum over all these points where it says, well, what y value did I observe? What do I have in the data? And what y value does the fit function, the model, give where I put in x and the parameters here? And then I take that and I divide it by the uncertainty on that y and square the whole thing. Here it's written with the squares for each. And so you sum that up over all points. And well, you might have pairs given like this. You might also have a histogram. And in case of a histogram, you get X and Y, but you actually also get uncertainty as on Y. And the Ys and the Xs depends on the binning. The importance and the power of this method is hard to overstate, because not only is it simple and elegant and unique, but it provides something that it's almost the only one that does, namely a goodness of fit measure. You can not only ask which one is the best, but also if it's good or not. And that's the chi-square test. So let's go back to our data here and put chi-square values on it. Lo and behold, p people seem to have been right. It was the third degree polynomial. That's what it's, well, that's what gives the highest probability. Let's see. So here are the chi-square values. It's minimal for the third degree polynomial, and they all have 42 degrees of freedom. And that gives a probability. Now, what is all of this? Well, it turns out in this statement here, well, typically, let's say that the model is 5 away from the value. Well, hopefully then the uncertainty is of the order 5, just as an example. And this whole term gives 1. You square it, it's still 1. And that means if things are good, then you should on average add 1 here. I'll get back to what I mean by degrees of freedom, Daniel. And that means that the number of terms you put in here should roughly correspond to the chi-square value. Now, if you count these, there are 46 bins or values here. So now you might ask, why do I not put 46 here? Well, that's because each of these functions had four parameters. I'll come back to defining it and why, but you subtract those four. So it's 46 points minus four parameters. That gives 42 degrees of freedom. And then you look at them and you say, well, all of them are pretty close to 42. Where does this number come from? We'll get back to that in a moment. All right, next up is the conclusion that this is the best model, but the two second degree polynomial is not too bad, right? The probability, and here comes a tricky part. The probability that comes out here is not the probability of being the best. It's the probability, and listen carefully, I'll repeat it many times. It's the probability that if the model is correct, then it's the probability of getting this chi-square or something worse. Okay? Which means that if the model is correct, then you can get all sorts of chi-square probabilities here, but they should distribute themselves uniformly between 0 and 1. Because sometimes you have the right model, but the jumping of the data, you can see it here, is simply unlucky everywhere. You don't get a good chi-square probability. And sometimes it jumps too little, and you are not in charge of that. And then you get 0.95 or something like that. We'll get to the interpretation just in a moment, but I just want to show you what happens if the uncertainties are smaller or larger. See, what about here? Now we've got larger uncertainties. I've just increased them. Run it again. Now, the chi-square values show that, well, the sine function is the best, and they all are pretty close to 42. But you know, with large errors, all the models fit the data best, the data well, not best, of course. It's none of these hypotheses you would say, well, it doesn't fit the data. Now let's try to make the uncertainties smaller. And we do the same thing again. We calculate the chi-square, we get the number of degrees of freedom, it's still 42. Wonder why I chose that. And we get a probability. And now, things become very, very clear. There is only one model that fits this data well, and that's the third degree polynomial. And that's fortunate because that's also how I generated this data. And all the others have very small probabilities. Again, I'll repeat the line of thinking. Let's say the sine function was correct. It's the right model. Then here is the probability, which happens to be very small. Here's the probability that if it's correct, that you will by random, if you repeated the whole thing again many times, would get something smaller. Well, it turns out that the chance of getting it smaller is very small, meaning either you were damn unlucky or the model is not right. And when this damn unlucky gets too small, probably you were not damn unlucky. Probably your model is not correct. We can't say that there's an 83% chance that this is the right hypothesis. Remember, there's an infinity of possible hypotheses. You can just include more parameters and values and so on. It is just, if we generate numbers with a third degree polynomial and fit it, then we will get a value between 0 and 1, and it will distribute itself uniformly. And we'll get back to that in the exercise. And if you get a value of, say, 83, you would say, okay, but that fits well. I believe in that hypothesis. But it does not exclude other hypotheses. Hypothesis testing, which we'll get to later, is the idea of, well, how sure am I that it's this one over this one? Okay. Question. Maria asked, do we always choose between these four models? No, the answer is there is an infinity of models to consider, but typically you would have two hypotheses, but we'll get back to that. And Marta was just answering Peter. Yeah, cool. All right. So here's the definition again, and I can only say commit to memory, please. Now, note that when we do a weighted mean, then we can actually do this check. So in a weighted mean, we have n measurements, and the value of the measurement, the number of the measurement is x, because we don't care about the order. But the measurement value is y, and the uncertainty, and there's an uncertainty on y. And it was actually much of what I showed here. A fit with a constant is equivalent to doing the weighted average, right? You say where to put this line. And in fact, you don't have to do a fit in this case because the weighted average gives you that value. But you can calculate the chi-square and ask, do these values even agree given those uncertainties? In this case, it says I get a chi-square of 9. I have 8 degrees of freedom because I have 9 points, but I have 1 fit parameter. And the probability comes out to be, well, about a third. A third. Does that sound okay? Sure, that's perfectly okay. Let's get to that part. Now, just an example of the mean and the chi-square. Let's say that I'm measuring I'm doing a pendulum experiment. This is purely a hypothetical. And I measure 4 lengths in millimeters. And here it's the, one of the distances. And each of you in a group goes up and measures it, and somebody gets 17.8 plus minus a half. The next comes up and say, well, I get some other value, and I try to do it more precisely. I think there's a limit to how accurately you can do it if this is in millimeters. I mean, you can do half millimeters, but then it gets hard. Well, the mean, the weighted mean is this. And I only put this many digits to show you the example. The error on the mean, and that's also weighted, is this. The chi-square value is this. The number of degrees of freedom, well, there are 4 measurements, and there's 1 parameter, namely the mean. And so the probability comes out to be this. It might be that these did not agree, and then you probably understated the uncertainties, or one of the measurements is clearly wrong. And that's why you do that check, to make sure that it seems reasonable. And so this is what you would write. Here's the length, here's the uncertainty on the mean, and here's the probability. Now, I promised to return to the idea of degrees of freedom. And well, here are two points and we fit it with a line. And no surprise, they go through each of the points and the chi-square is zero. Well, that's because there's no degree of freedom here. You have two points and two parameters. And of course, that's going to fit. That's part of the algebra curriculum. So what about, so the number of degrees of freedom is zero here. And if you put an exponential, it's going to do the same thing because an exponential function also has two parameters to it. Okay, what if I put in a third point? Now I get that there are three points, two parameters, so there's one degree of freedom. And well, the line does better than the exponential. And a rough line of thinking would be one degree of freedom and a chi-square of 14. That doesn't sound very good. But looking at it, and remember always to plot your data, it doesn't look very good. Of course, if we take a second degree polynomial, we're back to 0 degrees of freedom because that has three parameters. In general, what you do is that the number of degrees of freedom is the number of data points that you fit minus the number of variables. An example down here, well, we have 39 points. It's a parabolic fit, so there are three parameters, and we have 36 degrees of freedom. In this case, the chi-square is 30. So that sounds pretty good. It is. This is completely general, and I think what cheats most persons is when this is zero. And then you might say, when can that be zero? Well, in principle, you could also be comparing two histograms or two sets of numbers. And what would you then have? Well, then the model, you might consider one of the histograms or one of the sets of measurements, the model, and you compare what is one model value minus, well, sorry, one measurement minus the other measurement in terms of the uncertainty between the two. Well, so both the uncertainty from this y and from the second measurement enters here and they enter in quadrature. And in that case, you don't have any fit parameters. But don't be dismayed by that. You just subtract zero. You should always have data points. Okay, and now comes for how. Now we have 36 degrees of freedom, but only 30, a value of 30 of chi-square. How do we turn that into a probability? And the answer is using the chi-square distribution. I'm going to show it here, but it's not a distribution we're going to dwell much on because it's super complicated. But what goes on in a chi-square is the fact that when the model is correct, note again, if the model is correct, then each term you add to the chi-square is actually a unit Gaussian term, right? The number should maybe more than one sigma away, but it's a unit Gaussian. And if you take unit Gaussian numbers and square them and add them, then you get exactly the chi-square distribution. And what does it look like? Well, let's look at for 3, k equals 3. It's the sign here. Well, getting a chi-square of 0, that's hard. But getting a chi-square of 1 is actually the most likely. It's also quite likely to get a chi-square value of 3. And then there's a long tail out here. And here you can see the cumulative distribution of it. And so in all problems with where there are 3 degrees of freedom and you do a chi-square fit, if the model is correct, it should follow this distribution. Well, now you have the chance to say, well, let's say I had 3 degrees of freedom and I got a chi-square value of 7. That doesn't sound very good. No, but what I should ask myself And this is what the probability is. What is the chance, if I repeated this many times, to get this chi-square value or something higher? Well, that's the integral here of the remaining part. So that is here, this is about 90. So it's from here to here, well, 8% or so. I tried to explain it in detail here with an example. Again, let's do it in writing. So you get a chi-square of 7.1 and you have 5 degrees of freedom. And then you work out here, well, 7.1, that corresponds to 0.78 here, but we need the integral from here and out. So that's 22%. You should get 22% for that. And note again, that is if you had the right model, what's the chance of getting this chi-square or something worse? How do you get the integral of this function? Well, in the old days, it used to be tables, big lookup tables, because people sat doing these integrals and can't be solved analytically, and then you have to do numerical approximations, and it's a pain, and people had tables. Nowadays, the answer is just, well, here it is. It's in the Python stats package, and it's the survival function. And notice, before we looked always at the integral, but we want from a value and out, and hence it's these called survival function, 1 minus that integral. All right, that was a lot. Do you feel, well, let's take a few questions, and also I'm inclined to just continue for another 15 minutes and then we end here for today's lecture. But let's just take a few questions. Jakob asks, can this be extended to the case with uncertainty in both X and Y? And is this a common thing? Jakob, excellent question. The answer is yes, it can. So let's go back to some fit here. What if there was an uncertainty both in Y but also in X? What do you do? Well, to begin with, and this is an iterative procedure, you actually do the fit with only the uncertainties in Y. And then you might say, why is that? Well, that's because you want to try to translate the uncertainty in X into an uncertainty in Y. But you need the slope to do that. And it corresponds to, you could say, if this had an uncertainty in X also, then you want to know the distance to the line. But you don't know where the line, the fit is going to go. So you're going to start out by fitting just with the uncertainty in Y. And now that you have this fit, for example, let's say it had uncertainty in X also. Then you would say, well, I add the X uncertainty knowing the slope locally here. And when the slope is zero here, well, I hope you agree that if this point had an uncertainty in X, it wouldn't affect anything, right? Here, the model is only, it can only feel sort of the height of it. The slope is zero, and so an uncertainty in X is not going to have any impact. Whereas here, it's going to have a large impact because, well, if this point was on the side, well, it should be moved. So you do the fit with the Y uncertainties first, and then using the slope, you say the new Y uncertainty is the old one squared plus the uncertainty in X squared times the derivative squared. It's error propagation, you could say. And now you repeat it, the fit. I hope that answered your question, Jakob. All right. Susanna was answering another question. Lasse, comparing this to the least square problem, what do we do if each model gives similar chi-squared as in the high uncertainty scenario? Excellent question. Let's go back to the high uncertainty case. Here, the answer is what I wrote in the red box. You don't know. From this data, you cannot tell which one of these is the good model. But to some extent, I would also say, I remember a seminar with Barlow, and I'm gonna hold up the book. And the good Barlow, he was asked a super technical question on statistics. And he calmly said, don't worry too much about statistics. Just tell us what you do and make sure that you do what you tell us. Okay? So back to this case. If this was the data you had and you tried these four and you reported all of this, I think most people would agree that you had done what you could. That there's not a lot more to do here, simply because, all of the models fit. Some might say you designed a poor experiment because what you should have done is not get a lot of measurements between -1 and close to 4, but get some values at 5 and 6 and -2 and -3, because that would help you solve the problem. Okay. Did that answer that? Could you repeat the definition of that probability chi-square and degrees of freedom? We also need to go down. If you want me to repeat it, write it again. In what formula is the uncertainty accounted for in the chi-squared? Well, let's take it up again. Here is the uncertainty on the points. And so let's say you, for example, double the uncertainties and you have the same values. Well, then the chi-square would go down by a factor of 4. But if you double the uncertainties, then these points should, of course, also be jumping around a lot more. And hence, you should still get a good chi-square. Of course, the chi-square only makes sense if you have reasonable measurements and reasonable uncertainties. And this makes me want to mention one thing. Sometimes you don't know your uncertainties. For example, you're sitting with a pendulum, and every time it swings by in one direction, you put a marker, but you don't know how accurate you are. In fact, part of the experiment you're doing is trying to see how good you are, how accurate you are. And this is one thing we want. We want each and every one of you to know how accurate you are, each individual member of a group. Well, what can you do? Well, you can do a fit, and you don't have any uncertainties on these values, but what you can do is the reverse. You can assign uncertainties and then increase them or decrease them until the chi-square gives a 50% probability. And when that happens, these are probably the uncertainties that you have. Well, we'll get back to that. Susanna asked another. Yeah. Okay. Unless there are wild complaints, I will continue. And this is perhaps also one of the rather important slides. How to interpret this uncertainty? Well, roughly, you can say, if you sit in an auditorium and you look at data and somebody did a fit and you have no electronic means of calculating the chi-square probability, then the rule of thumb that the chi-square should be of roughly the same order as the number of degrees of freedom. So the ratio, and this is called the reduced chi-square, should be roughly 1. Is the only way you can evaluate it. But this is a rule of thumb, and I can say that it breaks down because if the number of degrees of freedom is low, then this can vary a lot, and if the number of degrees of freedom is high, this cannot. And why is that? Well, that's the underlying thing that the chi-square distribution here becomes more and more like a Gaussian, because we add a lot of terms to the chi-square, central limit theorem at play, and it gets relatively more and more narrow. So that means that if you have 300 degrees of freedom, then getting a chi-square of, say, 400, disaster. But if you only have 3 degrees of freedom, then a chi-square of 4, well, that's perfectly fine, right? Perfectly. And that's why the probability is the way to go. Now, if the probability is between 1% and 99%, and maybe I'm being a bit too large there, then I would say all is good. Remember, you should expect to get something uniformly between 0 and 1. So in at least 5% of the cases, you're going to get something below 0.05. Maybe 0.05 is more reasonable here. Now, if you get a probability below 1%, then I'd say you should be suspicious, because then probably your model or your data or your errors are not correct. Something funny is going on. And this is typically where we say, well, the hypothesis is not, assuming that the data is good, then the hypothesis is your data is probably not correct. And then there's the other end of the scale. What if I get, you know, some people would say, I got 99.9%. I'm happy. It's a super good fit. The answer is probably not. It's too good. How often should you get 99.9? Well, 1 in 1,000 by random. Most likely, you overestimated your errors, right? If you, in the chi-square definition, divide by something which is big, well, surely you're going to get a small chi-square. No problem. But that's probably you overestimating the uncertainties. And then I should warn that, for example, with the large data sets where you do a histogram, for example, you might have millions of measurements. And now you want to fit this and you believe that you can get all details in. Well, once you have millions of measurements, the uncertainties become very small. And suddenly all sorts of tiny effects sneaks in. And getting a good chi-square value when you have millions of measurements, I'm just warning you, it's hard. Yeah. Then there's a question from Jakob. How does the chi-square compare to other regression scoring parameters like R squared, RMSE, and so on? Yeah. I'm actually not going to introduce the R squared, because the R squared is a measure that you use when you don't have uncertainties. And when you do things without uncertainties, it also means that you don't get uncertainties on the fit parameters you get out. And as we concluded from the beginning, without uncertainties, well, the numbers have little meaning. So I would say the R squared, that's a number, just for everyone, it's a number between 0 and 1, to what degree the fit explains the data, you could say. And the closer it gets to 1, the better it is. However, it doesn't contain the sort of, it's just a measure, but it's hard to turn into probabilities and uncertainties. All right. How does the chi-square distribution approach a Gaussian when n becomes large? Well, let's take that. Let's take this fit, for example. Here, the chi-square is a sum of 36 small numbers, which in themselves should be Gaussianly distributed, but let's not assume that. They're not Gaussianly distributed because we square them, right? But you have 36 small numbers of equal size that you add. And then I hope that the exercise on the central limit theorem showed you that then they, well, converge towards a Gaussian. Does that make sense? So that's why it shouldn't be a surprise when you think about it. Don't worry, it took me a while to think about it. All right. Just to something for bin data. So let's say you have, well, a lot of bin data. And now, well, here's, I just took 100,000 measurements and said, well, I will put it closely. Well, the uncertainties then become small in each bin because, well, the number of counts here is 10,000. And as we shall see on Monday, if you have a count of 10,000 out of a much higher number, then the uncertainty is square root of 10,000 and it's Gaussian. And because of that, Pearson here, he said, I will invent the Pearson chi-square. It's just like before. I take the observed for each bin and I take the expected for each bin, right? That's the model. And I square it. And now I want to divide by the uncertainty squared. But I just told you that the uncertainty on a number is the square root of that number. We'll get to what the conditions are and so on. Well, the uncertainty squared, that's just the expectation value from the model. And so they had these big elaborate tables and ways of doing it, but fortunately we can just calculate by hand. It's just to show you what people had to go through in the old days. And so this is called the Pearson chi-square. And the only smart thing is the fact that you just say, how many observed, how many expected? Well, what's my model? What's my data? And I divide by the uncertainty I would expect from the model. Now, this means that you could continue adding bins, you know, to infinity here. And the observed here would be zero. And the expected would be very close to zero. That would be a Gaussian, right? So the PDF would die out real quick. And you would divide by also a small number. And so, well, where do you stop here? A way to make sure you stop is to say, well, I do the same thing. Well, let's keep here. I do the same thing. I just divide by the number of observed. That keeps the number of degrees of freedom to a reasonable level, right? If you do it with the expected, you can get really a lot of degrees of freedom in. If you divide by the observed here instead, then of course you can only do it when there's something in the bins. Well, if you define it to be a sum over all non-empty bins, then you don't divide by zero and you get a finite number of contributions to your chi-square and degrees of freedom. And then people have a rule of how many events should there be in a bin and so on. I won't dwell much into that. And then just to tell you that there are different definitions of the chi-square. There are many different ways of doing it. I've seen people do this as well, where they do the logarithm of the ratio. It's called the g-test. And there, I've seen recently in a talk from CERN that there were five different chi-square definitions. We stay with this one. Possibly with the observed here instead. Or, well, there's always the basic form, this one, which is the uncertainty. I don't care where you get the uncertainty from, but I just want the uncertainty on that number and your model here. All right. Then just a word of warning when fitting. And we'll get that to more of that next week. Here is what a chi-square landscape could look like. I know it says likelihood here, but imagine this is the chi-square. And here's some parameter. Well, as a function of that parameter, the chi-square goes up and down. We want to find the minimum, and the minimum is clearly here. But if you start by giving the fit a value here, then it might say, I go to one side, well, it goes up, that's not a good direction. I go to the other side, it goes even more steeply up. I try a few random values here and there. I think this is the minimum. The answer is it can get cheated. And so when doing fitting, you should always start with good fitting values. I would say fortunately, the chi-square is pretty robust to it. And the final point of the chi-square is the fact that when you do a fit, not only do you get the uncertainty on alpha from the fact that, well, it had a minimum about 1.34. I also said you get the uncertainty on alpha. And here's another example. Never mind what the fit is. But when you draw the chi-square, and this is the delta chi-square. So the minimum is, of course, at zero, because this is the distance to the minimal chi-square. Well, when you move out along the sides, then once you get to a chi-square that is one higher, then you've found the uncertainty on your parameter. And typically in a nice fit, this is a parabola. I've found particular one where the uncertainties are asymmetric. But in general, this is a parabola. And so it's the plus minus. You get the value then here. And once you go out to the sides where you get to one up in chi-square, well, that's the one sigma uncertainty. Imagine we then do a fit in two dimensions. Well, then it's a two-dimensional minimum. Well, then you do it in each direction. And if the minimum looks like a correlation, well, that's because there's a correlation between the fit parameters. A minui will return not only the fit value and not only the uncertainty, but in fact, a covariance matrix. So you can know the correlation between the two. Where does it come from that the uncertainty is where the delta chi-square is one? And there we go back to theoretical calculations. So again, I'm just going to state it, but this is not something up for discussion. Any theoretical statistician would agree with me highly here. I'm thinking of if there's a short proof of that. Surely people will have tried that. So please commit to memory the fact that you go one up here. And well, then I'll just say here is, for example, a fit to the universe. So these are the acoustics of the universe in the microwave background radiation. And just the fact that, well, here's a fit. And you can combine data from many different experiments and observations. And you see how the uncertainties that come in, each report uncertainties. And well, that's great. That's what we need for the chi-square. And you can just ask yourself, is Lambda CDM a good model? Well, seemingly so. And finally, and I think this is important. It was formerly the custom, and still so in works on the theory of observation, to derive the method of least squares from certain theoretical considerations, the assumption of normality of the errors of the observations being one such. Yeah, the uncertainties have to be Gaussian. It is, however, more than doubtful whether the conditions for the theoretical validity of the chi-square method are realized in statistical practice. In reality, when you do measurements, the uncertainties are perhaps never really Gaussian. And the student would do well to regard the chi-square method as recommended chiefly by its comparative simplicity. Simplicity is good. And by the fact that it stood the test of experience. It turns out that the chi-square is a quite robust method. It rarely gives something that's completely off the chart. And that is why it's extremely useful. All right. And with that, I'm just going to do one last thing. And that is, I'm going to launch a poll. And there are four quick questions. And we'll do it in 2 minutes time, 2.5 minutes. So please have a look. And it's on the chi-square, of course. 45 seconds left. And the last 10 seconds. Five, four. It sounds like a countdown for launching. Well, it's the anti-launch. All right, we'll end it here. And the results, I can just say thank you. It's true that in the chi-square, each contribution sums like the distance to the value in units of its uncertainty squared. Cool. And if there are 10 points and 3 parameters, well, there are 7 degrees of freedom. Thanks. What does the chi-square p-value represent? And yeah, it represents the probability of getting this fit quality, so this chi-square value, or better, assuming that the model is correct. So so you sort of assume that the model is correct. And of course, the trick is the fact that if you get a very low chi-square probability, then your assumption of a correct model is probably the one to discard. And what does the chi-square assume? Well, it assumes that the input uncertainties are Gaussian. And we'll get back to that when we get to fitting histograms, which is what you typically do. All right, enough of that. If there are any more questions, I suggest that we take it on the during the exercises. I will be the initial TA along with Nikki. And the rest of you can convene in Fredericksburg. And after that, I wish you a great weekend. Thanks for now.